but just by looking here. Whatever happens in the land is reflected in this map. Annoyance forgotten, his fingers skimmed the air above the toy towns, the wheat fields, the open meadows and the wooden glens. "Isn't it magnificent?" he whispered. There was something so naked in his face, Asher felt embarrassed. Love, longing, avarice, desire, or some strange alchemical blending of all those difficult emotions. It was too intimate a moment for observance. He looked up. Whether it was his imagination or some trick of the crystal-clear glass arching overhead, he didn't know, but the stars looked close enough to touch. The wall, too. Silver and gold crushing him with beauty. He had to look down again. It was too much to bear. Gar still circled his little kingdom like a cat contemplating a bowl of cream, lost in a private reverie with his soul stripped bare, so he found something else to look at. The chamber's curving walls had long ago been soothed smooth and white with plaster, and fitted from floor to waist height with sturdy cherrywood bookshelves and a single, double-doored cupboard. The shelves were burdened with leather-bound books, some thick, some slender, some ancient, some nearly new. The space between the ceiling and the first crammed shelf was covered like a child's scrapbook with calendars, charts, diagrams, hand-scrawled notes on yellowing scraps of parchment, sketches, jottings. Skimming their circular surface, he saw they were all in some way connected with the weather. Rainfall patterns, wind patterns, seasonal guides, planting guides, snowfall indicators. Notes concerning what crops were harvested when, and where, and how, and what each farmer needed to get the job done in a timely fashion. How much rain was needed to lush the grass in the horse-breeding Dingles district. How much snow the ice grape growers felt was just enough to nurture their precious vines. How deep down the River Gant should freeze for the very best of winter skating, and what was the best temperature for its careful melting come the spring. Not a single facet of Ulken or Doran in life was missing. Everything thought of. Everything cared for. When he'd come full circle, he looked at Gar, shook his head. "I had no idea." "Why should you?" said Gar. He'd stopped prowling round the map and was watching him instead. His face was comfortable again, all private feeling decently tucked away. "Weatherworking isn't an Ulken concern. It's not even a Doranan concern. Only the weatherworker is required to shoulder this burden, to know its weight and import in the world. The balance is too delicate, the scope for disaster too great for it to be otherwise." He smiled. "A boat is less likely to capsize with only one hand on the tiller."
"It's too much," said Asher. "Too much for one man or woman."
He waved his hand at the crowded wall.
"You thought Fane could do this? Little Fane? She never would have been strong enough. I could have near snapped her in half with my bare hands."
Gar's pale face stilled, so it looked like a mask of marble. Asher, realizing what he'd just said, cursed under his breath.
"Gar, I didn't mean... Look,
it's all right. In the end, she did break easily, didn't she? But that was just flesh and bone. What we have here is a matter of power. And Baal knows Fane had more of that than most."
"More than you?"
Gar shrugged. "It's moot. The only question that counts now is, do I have enough?"
"And do you?"
"That's what we're here to find out, isn't it?"
Again,
Asher looked at the chamber's wall with its burden of knowledge, of history, of expectations. "You got any idea what all this means?" "Some," Gar admitted. "But I'm not so worried about that. See those books in the bookshelves?
They're the diaries of every weather worker who ever lived, all the way back to Baal herself. Contained in those pages is everything I need to know about the weather and the wall, and how they work to keep each other strong. All I need to do is read them and remember, and we both know I'm very good with books. Asher looked away. Books, aye. Gar had never had trouble with books. But this was different. This was all their futures, their health and their happiness, and the ordered life of Lur. And it rested in the hands of a man not so far past his majority, and only recently come into his magical birthright. A man alone, bereft of an older, experienced voice to guide him when he doubted, to support him when he stumbled, to save him if he failed. Suddenly he was feeling sick again. Maybe Geralt's right. Derm should be here. What help will I be if something goes? Gar's face tightened with impatience. How often must I say it? Nothing will go wrong. This is my destiny, Asher. How can I be doomed to disaster when Baal herself has placed me on her throne?
I don't know, he said unhappily. But there's more than one fisherman who set out to sea under clear skies and never come home again. Sometimes storms break without warning, Gar.
West Wailing was an accident, Gar said curtly. The unfortunate result of illness. I am meant to be here. Nothing will go wrong.
Asher shoved his hands in his coat pockets. Why couldn't you stop the horses?
What?
There were 5 magicians in that carriage, Gar. You trying to tell me one of you couldn't have used magic to stop the horses from galloping over the edge of Salbert's Eyrie?
Gar stared at him. The art, if you can call it that, of magically influencing another living thing is long lost to us. Baal forbade it, and with good reason. Can you imagine what might happen if one magician could crawl inside another's mind and work his will unhampered?
Asher turned away. He could imagine it, aye, and bloody well wished he couldn't. Gar's voice pursued him.
What are you really trying to say? I thought the accident was behind us. I thought we had moved on from uncertainty and suspicion. Was I mistaken? Do you still have doubts? Do you doubt me?
Chapter 8.
No! Said Asher, turning back. But it's all happening so fast. This time last night we're standing at the edge of Salbert's Eyrie. I've just crawled up from seeing your poor dead family, and you're there telling the world it was Conroy Geralt who killed him. A day later it's all decided what happened were an accident. You're proclaimed king, and here we are in the most secret, sacred place in the kingdom, ready for you to make it rain, and me to save you if it all goes arse over eyeballs. I'm dizzy, Gar. I just want to stop, just for a minute, so's I can get my bearings. Sink me, I'm a fisherman. I never came to Dorna for this.
Gar's face was riven with stresses he'd never asked for, never deserved. And I never expected to be king. Baal, have mercy, don't you think I'd sacrifice every last drop of magic in me if it would turn back time and save them? Do you think I wanted this?
Of course I bloody don't. Nobody in his right mind would want this.
But I have it, Gar said grimly. Want it or not, it's mine.
But not mine,
he said, and thumped his chest.
I'm Oaken. Your magic's got nowt to do with me. And if this does go arse over eyeballs, I don't want to be the one left behind to explain what you're doing, lying stone dead on the floor.
A ringing silence. Then Gar flicked a finger and the chamber door swung open. Of course, I should have realized. I'm sorry. Expecting argument or rebuke, Asher blinked. No, it's all right. Only fools never feel fear. a bleak smile. I'm so afraid right now I could vomit. But that's not your concern. You're right. This weather chamber is no place for an Ulken. Torn between relief and guilt, he shoved his hands back into his pockets.
Seagar, you got to be careful now. Geralt could use me being here as a way to undermine you.
With a flash of unfamiliar arrogance, Gar lifted his chin. He could try.
That's a point. He would. He will.
No. The point is that I've been selfish. In the time since we first met, I've come to think of you as the brother I never had. I suppose I hoped, thought, you felt the same way.
Gar, his brother?
Asher stared. He had enough damned brothers to last him a lifetime. Did he really want another one? One with blonde hair, a crown, and enough trouble trailing in his wake to start a dozen fist fights down at the Goose? The answer came slowly, but with certainty. Yes, he did. Because despite all the aggravation and the irritation, the heart-stopping catastrophes and the niggling spats, in a little over a year, Gar had given him more, trusted him more, leaned on him more, laughed with him more, and cared about him more than his flesh and blood brothers had in a lifetime. The realization must have shown in his face, because Gar smiled. I'm glad. Now go.
Go? He echoed.
But brothers don't burden each other unfairly, Gar said. His expression was contrite, earnest. Get some rest. You look exhausted. But before you retire, send a message to Conroy Geralt asking him to join me. I'll wait till he arrives. Asher cleared his throat.
Good. This was good. He didn't belong here in the fiery heart of Doran and magic. No Ulken did.
You're sure? Gar nodded. Yes. It has to be Conroyd. He took a hesitant step backwards, battled his better judgment, lost, and said,
If you really want me to stay, I'll...
What I want isn't important. Go, Asher. I'll see you in the morning. Guts churning, he turned and walked towards the open door. He was relieved. He was affronted. He was thrilled. He was furious. Bastard! Why couldn't Gar have argued? Why did he have to be so understanding, so reasonable? Did Gar think he couldn't do it? That he wasn't strong enough to take whatever weather working could dish out, even as a bystander? Somewhere deep inside, did Gar think the Ulken were weak? That he was weak? He reached the door, fingers touching the unpainted timber. He stopped. Was he weak? Damn it! He shouted, and slammed the chamber door closed in his own face, whirled around to glare at watchful, waiting Gar. You always know what to say, don't you? Always know which strings to pull so's you can get your own way. I should have known. I've watched you do it day in, day out as a bloody Ulken administrator. Mind you, can't say I ever expected to find you administrating me. Gar flushed, folded his arms across his chest. Well, did it work? Of course it worked, you devious bastard. I'm on this side of the bloody door, ain't I? The first true, unfettered smile since the accident lit Gar's face. Don't expect me to apologize, he snorted. Don't worry. I'm dumb, but I ain't that dumb. I know I'm asking a lot, Gar said, the bright smile fading. It seems I'm always asking a lot from you. But don't expect me to apologize for that either. You're a man with many gifts, Asher. Gifts best used for the good of this kingdom. And if you think I'll stop using them just because the idea makes you uncomfortable, or me, then you really should walk away now.
No. I already got one friend harmed for life 'cause I walked away.
Jed, Asher folded his arms against the bruising memory and thudded his shoulder blades to the door.
I'm staying. Gar nodded.
Good. He returned to the map of Lur, his expression now revealing uncertainty, caution, a wary hope. It's like a dance, he whispered. One with a set pattern that hasn't changed in over 6 centuries, that's been passed from weather worker to weather worker since the weather magics were born. All I have to do is find the right place to join in. He frowned. The transfer of incantations from the orb was difficult, painful. Derm said it was to be expected, but...
You think it didn't work?
No, it worked, said Gar. The weather magics are in me. If I close my eyes, I can see their shapes, taste the words. The sigils tingle my fingertips, eager for release.
Asher shrugged.
Then let's not keep 'em waiting.
No, let's not.
Stepping slowly, walking widdershins around the map, Gar raised his right hand and traced a figure in the air. Its shape glowed, burned bright as fire, then faded. At the same time, he pronounced a single word, Luknik. Another shape, with the left hand this time. Another word, Tolnik. Bright fire burned and faded. Right hand, word. Left hand, word. Right hand, word. Left hand, word. Out of nowhere, a wind rising. It centered around Gar, stirred his clothing as he walked and spoke and drew burning patterns in the air. Still leaning against the closed door, Asher felt his skin prickle and saw a faint blue shimmer dance along his forearms, then disappear. The power was building. As he watched, caught between fear and fascination, small clouds thickened over the map's mottled Dorana city. Touched by a shadow, he glanced up and saw clouds through the glass-domed ceiling, spinning into life out of the clear night sky. Buffeted more strongly now, Gar continued to circle the map, sweating as he traced more sigils in the air and uttered the words of power, faster and faster. The wind increased in strength, began to howl like a live thing trapped and tortured. 3 more turns around the table and he could walk no further. The wind was too strong, the power too great. So he stood, braced against its might and fury, arms raised, fingers battling to make the signs that would call the rain. His eyes were screwed tight closed and his mouth was open in a silent gasping, as though he were being torn apart. The writhing clouds above the map billowed outwards to cover the entire recreation of Lur. Tiny forks of lightning flickered in their depths, to be echoed a heartbeat later in the clouds above chamber and city. Thunder rumbled, inside and out. Blue light like little fingers of flame danced the length of Gar's body, unraveled his disciplined hair and whipped it round his face as though the long blonde strands were alive and in torment. At its raging peak, the power ignited into a wild blue firestorm, roaring and crackling and feeding on itself, with Gar at its greedy heart. Blood burst from his eyes, from his nose, his ears, his mouth, and his whole body flailed and shook. He opened his mouth and screamed like a man on fire. Horrified, Asher started forward, then stopped. Indecision, a knife at his throat.
Gar! He shouted. Gar, are you all right? Is this normal or not? What should I do? For Baal's sake, tell me what to do.
But Gar was far beyond hearing. In the nightmare leaping of blue flame and golden glimlight, His blood-slicked face looked inhuman, unreachable, unknown. Then, as had happened at the height of the storm and west wailing, an enormous explosion of sound rent the air. Asher cried out and clapped his hands to his ears. Gar echoed him, screaming as though he'd been pierced by a sword. And overhead the blotting clouds wept their summoned rain like a benediction over Dorna City and all the lands of Lur. Conroy Geralt was entertaining friends to dinner, only the heads of the best houses, naturally, those closest in status to his own. The Dorannan might be illustrious by nature, but still, some families were more illustrious than others. Sorvold, Boker, Daltrey, Hafat, direct descendants of the great exiles from old Dorna, those wise magicians who'd seen the way the wind was blowing and fled before Morgan's madness destroyed them, as it destroyed hundreds of other, less perspicacious magicians. They were names to be proud of, histories that would embarrass no one, most particularly their host. And they were all senior members of the kingdom's general council too, with their busy fingers pressed against any number of pulses. A man could be a friend and useful at the same time. In fact, it was better if he was. Of course, council service or not, none of those names was as illustrious as his own. Conroy Geralt of House Geralt, founded by Lyndon Geralt, one of the finest magicians the Dorannan race had ever produced. Only the royal house could boast a better pedigree, more exceptional magicians, and even that was subject to debate. After all, would House Geralt have bred up a cripple as heir to the throne? No, it most certainly would not. Were it not for the treachery and mischance his family had suffered during the turbulence of Trevoil Schism, it would be weatherworkers born of House Geralt, not Torvig, who ruled the kingdom of Lur. Dusty memory had power still to boil his blood. The degree of kinship between his ancestor and the madman Morgan had been slight, hardly worth mentioning. Good for the merest footnote in the annals of history, if that. More importantly, there had never been so much as a breath of an allegiance between the insane sorcerer and his twice-removed cousin Lyndon. As Baal was his witness, Lyndon had been one of the first to voice concern over Morgan's experiments. Could Born Torvig have claimed the same of his own ancestor? No, he could not. But that seemingly counted for nothing. Morg's shade haunted them all, tainted him still in some eyes, though no one would dare say so to his face. Only now, with the near extinction of House Torvig, did blighted House Geralt have a chance to assume its rightful place in Dorannan history. Why, if Gar had been killed along with his family, or if the miracle flowering of his magical birthright had never happened, it would be Conroy Geralt who stood today as king. But Gar wasn't dead, and his late-born powers appeared formidable, which meant that yet again House Geralt was to be denied its proper place in the world. Fate could be monstrously unfair. Not for the first time Geralt regretted his lack of a daughter. He could have married a daughter to the fate-favored scion of House Torvig and died less unhappily, knowing his blood flowed through the veins of Gar's child, the kingdom's next weatherworker. But no, even that small consolation was denied him. Two children he'd been granted, like most citizens of Lur. Even if dispensation could be arranged for the birth of a third child, it was far too late now, and just as likely his dull and dutiful wife would waste the effort on another son. Still, where the prospect of rightful glory was concerned, not all hope was lost. Fat Derm's hold on life was yet precarious, or so discreet inquiries informed him. With the master magician's successor carelessly unnamed, Gar would be forced to make the appointment himself, and it was clear that in all the kingdom there was no one better bred, better qualified, or more deserving of the honour than Lord Conroy Geralt.
"My dear,"
a voice beside him murmured.
"The wine."
Geralt blinked and watched his surroundings swim back into focus. His dining room lavishly appointed, his wife lavishly jewelled, his friends waiting patiently for his next unimpeachable pronouncement. "Wine?" The immaculate Olkin servant, standing at his elbow, bowed and held out a bottle for his inspection. "As requested, my lord, Vontifer Ice Wine, vintage 564, chilled for precisely 40 minutes. Noel Daltrey wagged a finger.
564? Cutting it a bit fine there, aren't you, Con? Ice wine don't hold its bite for more than 80 years. Any longer than that, and you might as well pour us a glass of piss and vinegar.
Con. Geralt hid his irritation behind a bland smile.
Don't worry, Noel. The 80th anniversary of this vintage's bottling isn't until tomorrow.
Daltrey hooted and slapped the table.
Vintage ice wine and vintage Conroy. What an evening!
Geralt nodded at the servant, who broke the bottle's dewarded seal and splashed a mouthful into the next course's wine glass. The ice wine's thin, snow-laden tang sliced through the dining room's lingering redolence of honey-baked lamb, muscatel venison, and spiced pork. Geralt's guests sighed and licked their lips. He rested the rim of the glass against his teeth, subduing greed, and permitted a trickle of clear blue indulgence into his mouth. It cleansed his jaded palate like magic.
"Perfect,"
he said, lowering the glass, and nodded again at the servant. The other glasses were scrupulously burdened with 3 inches of ice wine, not a hair's breadth more. The disappointment-laced avarice in his guest's eyes almost made him laugh out loud. Waiting, he travelled his gaze around all their guzzling faces. When the servant had withdrawn and they were again alone, he remarked,
"So, a new day dawns for our beloved kingdom."
As though invisible cords had been cut, his fellow diners let out silent sighs of relief and relaxed in their chairs. Morrel, Sorvold's robustly handsome wife, fluttered her jewel-crusted fingers.
"I must say, Conroy dear, it's all terribly disconcerting. I mean, the boy's a child, in magic at least, if not in fact, and even there he's still young. What kind of a king will he make? Does anybody know? Does anybody know him? I certainly don't."
Ayasha Hafar was nodding her vigorous agreement. Her diamond pendant earrings prismed the chandelier's glim light and scattered rainbows across the tablecloth.
"Exactly. Why, he's practically a stranger. I think he's only ever attended one of my garden parties, and I'm sure even then it was under sufferance. I'd swear you could count on the fingers of one hand the number of invitations he's accepted in the last year."
"Dorinan invitations,"
her husband added dryly.
"As far as I can make out, he's always available for carousing with the Olkin."
Toby Boker replaced his emptied wine glass on the table and belched.
"Don't be too hard on him, Gord. For a start, it's been his job to mix with Olkin society, and for another..."
"For another?"
said Madri Boker, smiling at her husband as she finished his sentence for him in her irritating little girl whisper.
"I don't imagine he ever felt comfortable around his own kind. Not while he was..."
She blushed.
"You know..."
"I think the word you're avoiding is crippled," Geralt replied. "No, no, my friends, please don't look like that. I assure you, he applied the term to himself often enough. Born son is nothing if not a realist."
"You'd know, serving with him on the Privy Council,"
said Payne Sorvold.
"What else is he, do you think?"
"Our king,"
said Lynthia Daltrey. Her sharply jutting chin looked more stubborn than ever. Noel had long since lost the battle to control her. Such a pity.
as ordained by Baal and therefore above reproach. I have to say I liked his speech in the square today. It showed heart, courage. I think his father would have been proud.
A reflective silence fell. Geralt waited for his wife to break it. Baal save him, she was a woman who couldn't abide a room without words in it.
All I know, Aetien said peevishly, is that it will feel most peculiar, addressing that unfortunate young man as Your Majesty. He's younger than both of my boys.
I suppose he's got what it takes to be king,
Madry said uncertainly.
I mean to say, Baal wouldn't allow an incompetent to inherit the throne, would she?
Almost as one, their gazes flicked to the glass balcony doors through which gleamed the wall's distant golden haze. Geralt hid a smile at the sight of their apprehensive expressions. Even tediously devout Linthea had her doubts. As well she should have. Lyr was in great danger now than ever before, even during the schism. How lucky for his friends and their children that Conroy Geralt was at hand. Watching their silent dismay, the way they tried not to look at each other or reveal unflattering fear, he again wanted to laugh out loud. Ah, dear. They were good enough people, these friends of his, but as transparent as his dining room windows. Lacking any kind of real ambition or inner fire, they represented the best that Doranan society had to offer, yet not a one of them was strong enough to wield real power, to balance the kingdom in the vital role of master magician, or wear the crown of the weather worker. Only he was. And praise Baal for that. For if Gar's power should prove insufficient, if the strain of weatherworking killed him sooner rather than later, as had happened more than once in the past, if he should fail to produce an heir, or sired one as crippled as he himself had used to be, well... Thunder boomed over their heads, rattling the window panes and the emptied wine glasses on the table. Geralt's secret smile died.
"What was that?"
he demanded, pushing to his feet. Aetien pointed at the sky beyond the doors.
"Look! Clouds!"
"And lightning!"
added Toby Boker. The words had hardly left his mouth when the room strobed a second time, as outside, spears of blue-white fire streaked earthwards from the rapidly thickening atmosphere. Even as they watched, the wall's golden glow dimmed, dimmed, and disappeared. Gord Hafar stood and crossed to the doors, flung them open and thrust his hand outside. He looked back over his shoulder.
"It's going to rain,"
he announced.
"The air's alive with it. You never told us Gard had been given the weather magics, Conroyd."
Gord sounded accusing. In his eyes, a shadow of hurt surprise. Fool. Just because he shared his ice wine, did Gord think he'd share his secrets too?
"You didn't need to know," he replied brusquely. "Before the accident, there was still a question mark over the succession. There was no way of telling who would prove to be the stronger weather worker, Fain or Gar, without testing them first."
Payne Sorvold cleared his throat, his expression disapproving.
"You took a risk, Conroyd. The law is clear on the matter. Only two people might possess weather magic at the same time. The weather worker and the weather worker in waiting. Such action was a recipe for another schism. As Privy Councillor, you should have stopped it."
Geralt spared the man an impatient glance, inwardly seething. Who was Payne Sorvold to task him?
"Exceptional circumstances require the taking of risks and the bending of law. As Privy Councillor, it is my duty to recognise that. Besides, the danger of schism was Bourne's doing, not mine. If he hadn't bullied his way into a dispensation for a second child, we never would have faced a divided succession in the first place. If you're going to criticise anyone, Payne, Why not start with the General Council for weakly acquiescing to...
The General Council?
Noel said loudly, his flabby cheeks reddening.
Weakly acquiesced to nothing! We did what had to be done for the good of the kingdom. We acted according to law and with Baal's blessing.
And why we're arguing about it now, nearly 20 years later, I cannot begin to understand, added Linthia. The point is moot.
As is the question of Gar receiving the weather magic, said Geralt. His gaze remained fixed upon the curdling sky.
With the death of his sister, he is once more an only child. The line of succession is clear, and the law stands.
On a sprained ankle, if you ask me, muttered Noel.
Nobody did, dear, said Linthia, and patted his arm. Never mind. As Con says, what's done is done. All that really matters is we have a weather worker and the kingdom is safe.
As if to punctuate her words, a thunderclap like the end of the world boomed over their heads. The women shrieked. The men shouted. Geralt laughed. Beyond the open glass doors, the murky, cloud-covered sky gushed rain like a woman whose waters have broken. King Gar, weather worker of Lur, was born. Geralt eased away from his dining table, crossed to the doors leading out to the uncovered balcony, stepped over the threshold and into the rain.
What are you doing, Conroyd?
Atian demanded breathlessly.
You can't stand out there. You'll be soaked. All your clothes will be ruined. Come back inside. Conroyd? Conroyd, are you listening? Conroyd!
He ignored her, ignored the surprised protests of his dinner guests, walked to the very edge of the balcony, 6 tall stories above the ground, braced his widespread hands on the balustrade, and looked out across the city. Looked further, beyond the city's encircling wall to the invisible horizon. The view was exactly the same. Rain, rain, rain. The weeping clouds went on forever. His new silk brocade tunic was sodden, a dragging weight against his shoulders. Rivulets of water ran down his arms, his chest, his legs, and pooled in his brand new shoes. Yes, Atian, all ruined. He tipped back his head and felt more water from his soaking hair run down the back of his neck. Eyes open, mouth open, he lifted his face to the pouring rain. Drowned himself, blinded himself, in the miracle of Gar's calling. Every droplet was a needlepoint of acid etching him with bitterness and despair, in his flesh, his bones, his bowels, in his heart, and the secret places of his soul. Born, you bastard, you bastard, you've beaten me again. Released at last from the weather magic's merciless grasp, Gar swayed drunkenly, bloodily, then collapsed unstrung to the floor beside the map of Lur, where the little clouds dropped tiny vanishing raindrops from the mountains to the sea. Groaning, retching, shaking, he began to laugh. Asher dropped to his knees beside him.
It ain't funny! He shouted, fright shattering his voice. You maniac! You great raven lunatic! What are you laughing for? It ain't bloody funny!
Flopping like a landed fish, Gar stared up at him through a mask of blood.
It worked! He gasped, spitting scarlet bubbles. Did you see? It worked! I made it rain! Everywhere! Fiend never managed that!
Aye, Asher muttered, scrabbling in his pockets for a handkerchief. You made it rain, and you made a mess, and you took 10 years off my life, you daft bastard!
Hold still! You know? That hurt!
Gar wheezed as Asher mopped the worst of the gore from his face.
A lot! But it was incredible. The power, I never knew
I never dreamed. Oh, Asha, aren't you sorry you'll never know what it's like? That you'll never command a power like it? Aren't you, I don't know, jealous? You can tell me. I won't mind. I'll understand.
Asha stared down at him, at his shivering, shuddering, pain-racked body. Oh, aye, I'd be so jealous I could spit.
Gar grinned redly and stared up at the glass-domed ceiling, enchanted.
Look, he whispered. Look what I did.
Aye, he said as the rain fell from the quietly clouded sky. The sound of it striking the transparent ceiling woke gentle echoes in the chamber below. Look what you did. Now shut your trap while I find something to clean you up proper, because if you go back to the tower looking like this and Darren sees you, sure as sharks the old crow will find some way to make this all my fault. And then, relenting, added roughly, your dad'd be proud right now, I reckon. And your ma too. Fresh tears gathered in Gar's bloody eyes.
I hope so,
he whispered, triumph extinguished, lurking grief ascendant once more.
Oh, I hope so.
Asha cursed.
Fool, damned fool, just when he got him smiling again.
Come on, he said. Slipping an arm beneath Gar's shoulders, he levered the exhausted king upright. Scoot yourself backwards and lean against the wall till you're feeling better. Looking around the chamber, he scowled.
Why ain't there any chairs in here?
I don't need a chair, said Gar, sliding by inches across the parquetry floor. He reached the wall, slumped against it and groaned.
I'm fine.
Asha stood. You don't look fine. You look like shit. Eyes half closed, Gar raised a finger.
Now, now. Remember to whom you speak.
Excuse me, he said. You look like royal shit. Gar's lips twitched.
That's better.
Does it still hurt?
Oh, Asha.
Gar blinked his eyes open again.
You have no idea.
But he did. Some idea, anyway. He'd heard Gar's screams, after all. Watched helpless as his friend writhed inside the power. Convulsed. Wept blood even as he laughed.
Well,
uncertain, he folded his arms.
For how long? For always? I mean, is this your life now? Nought but blood and pain?
With an effort, Gar pulled his knees up to his chest and wrapped his arms around them.
Yes, but you can't do this every day, he said, appalled. You can't bleed and hurt like this every day. How will you stand it?
Gar shrugged.
The same way my father did, and my grandfather, and my great-grandmother, back and back and back till the dawn of our days here. But you can't!
I must. What's the alternative? Shirk my duty and hand the crown to Conroy Geralt? Gar pulled a face.
I don't think so. Besides, it's not every day. Well, not always. As I recall, my father sometimes had 2 days' respite at a time, between callings, 3 even in winter.
He smiled, remembering.
Winter is good.
Gar, nought happens in winter. What about spring? The remembering smile faded then and Gar frowned at his knees.
Oh, spring. Yes, spring is not so good.
You fool! Spring'll kill you if this is just a taste of what's to come!
Gar shook his head.
No, it won't. You're forgetting this wasn't a normal working. Tonight I made it rain from one end of the kingdom to the other, and that's not the way it's usually done. Not even in the spring. You're worrying over nothing. I'm fine, or I will be soon enough.
He stretched a hand out in front of him and flexed his fingers with only a small grimace.
See? The pain's easing already.
Asha snorted.
Even if you poked my eyes out, I could tell you were lying. Gah!
The outstretched fingers became a fist.
Don't!
Then Gar's icy gaze melted and the fist became a hand, became vulnerable fingers, trembling.
I am who I am, Asher. I was born for one reason and one reason alone. You can't change that.
Asher kicked one boot heel against the floor, scuffing the polished parquetry.
All right, he muttered grudgingly. If you say so. You're the king.
Yes,
said Gar.
I am.
In his voice, echoes of pain and a tired, replete satisfaction. And now the king says, time to go home.
Not till I clean up the rest of that blood. You look like a slaughterhouse apprentice.
His gaze fell on the chamber's single cupboard. On impulse, he crossed to it, opened the doors, and inside found a pile of soft rags, bow, and a stoppered vial. Looking back at Gar, he said,
seems like your dad kept himself prepared.
Hors d'oeuvre,
agreed Gar.
Bring them here.
There ain't any water.
Gar smiled.
Give me the bowl. I'll take care of the water.
He handed it over, then sank cross-legged to the floor and watched as Gar closed his eyes, spread his hand above the empty vessel, and whispered something under his breath. A blue spark ignited in the space between clay and flesh. Gar grunted, his face contracting against new pain. The blue spark briefly danced, then died, and the bowl began to fill with water from the bottom up, as though an invisible spigot had been opened. Asher laughed.
How'd you do that?
Gar gave him back the bowl.
Do you really want to know?
Abruptly, he remembered who he was and where he was and what the penalties were for asking those kind of questions.
No.
It's all right, said Gar. I'll answer. If you want the truth, it'll be a relief to talk about it. With them, unwell, there's nobody else to listen.
Asher dipped his fingers in the water. It was warm. Wetting one of the soft cloths, wringing it out, he said,
Hose'd listen.
Gar shook his head.
I can't talk to Hose. Not about this. Not about any kind of magic. I can't talk to any of them.
He held out the cloth.
I suppose not.
Holes may be a cleric, but he's also on the Privy Council and friends with Geralt, said Gar, his voice muffled as he cleaned his face. With all the prominent Dorinan. If there was even the smallest suggestion I was unsure about the weather working, about anything.
He sighed.
I know. Goodbye, King Gar. Hello, King Comroid.
With a grunt, he unstoppered the vial from the cupboard. A pungent, eye-stinging stink wafted into the chamber. He spat out the cork, choking.
I'm not drinking that, said Gar.
Cautiously, Asher sniffed.
One of Nix's little concoctions. It pongs a bit like the one he gave me after getting back from West Wailing. Your dad must have kept it here. For afterwards.
He held out the vial.
You might as well. I mean, you're so weak right now, I could just pinch your nose shut and tip it down your throat. But that'd be a mite undignified, I reckon. You know? Seeing as how you're king and all.
Glaring balefully, Gar held out his hand.
I don't know when, and I don't know how, but I swear I'll get you for this.
Asher grinned.
Course you will. Just one swallow, mind. We got no idea how strong that muck is.
Gar swallowed, gagged, thrust the vial blindly in Asher's direction and scrubbed at his mouth with a blood-stained rag.
And after I've got you, he panted, spitting and hawking, I'll bloody well get Nix too.
Asher restoppered the vial, then inspected his friend. Whatever was in the pother's vile sludge, it was doing the trick. A little colour was returning to Gar's complexion, and his hands were steadier.
Better?
He asked. Gar grimaced.
Yes.
Into the fallen silence, as the magic rain clouds thinned into memory over the map of Lur, he said,
So, seems you are a weather worker, just like your da.
The faintest of smiles ghosted over Gar's face.
Yes, and you know what that means.
Asher let his head drop. Here it came.
I got a sneaking bloody suspicion.
There's no one else I'd trust to be Ulken Administrator, said Gar. And no one else I need more on my Privy Council. But I promise you this, Asher. When Derm is well again and I am settled into my rule, when I am married and the succession is assured, if you want to go back to your precious ocean, I'll make no attempt to stop you. And when you do leave, it will be as a fabulously wealthy man.
Asher turned his head to stare at tiny Resthaven, where tiny boats made of magic danced in the tiny harbour. With money and power and King Gar's blessing, his brothers would never stand in his way again. He'd return home inviolate, able to dictate his own destiny without interference. And Dathne had offered to be his assistant. He grinned.
Ah, sink it. Resthaven ain't going anywhere.
Does that mean you accept?
Aye, he said. I accept.
Chapter 9. From her privileged position as a member of the elite royal staff, Dathne sat on her cushioned seat in Justice Hall and watched Barlsman Hulls crown Gar as Lur's new king. A temporary dais had been erected at the front of the hall, where usually the lawgiver sat and pronounced sentence. Draped in gold velvet, it shimmered richly in the glimlight called for the occasion. Hands meekly clasped before him, Gar knelt on a crimson cushion at Holz's feet as the Barlsman prayed over his bowed head. In contrast to the cleric's jewel-crusted green and gold and crimson brocade robes, his gold-laden cap and the various holy rings clasping his fingers, Lur's almost crowned king was dressed starkly in white. He looked like a sapling willow stripped bare of bark. Young, vulnerable, unready for the burden fate had thrust upon him. Beside her, dressed in the finest silks and brocades she'd ever seen him wear, Asher watched the ceremony in anxious silence, fretting, she suspected, on things going wrong at the very last moment. Worrying that all his hair-tearing work with Darren would somehow come to naught. She let her fingers drift to his arm and lightly squeezed, smiled when he glanced at her. He smiled back, but without enthusiasm. Holes spread his arms wide and tipped back his head.
Oh, blessed Baal, look down upon this man, your child in magic. And hear now his solemn oath, sworn in this place before you and all his people. Anoint him with your beneficence, pour your strength into his heart and guide him to truth and wisdom all the days of his life.
Gar looked up then, folded his hands across his chest.
Blessed Baal, from whom all life flows, I solemnly swear to serve you and the kingdom you gave us, Doranan and Ulken alike, unto my last living breath. I will keep your children in peace and prosperity, working the weather, keeping your great wall strong and upholding your laws without exception until my last drop of blood is shed. May magic desert me if I am untrue.
Holes nodded at a waiting acolyte. The robed assistant stepped forward, bearing the weather worker's crown, handed it to him. Dathne held her breath as the intricately wrought silver and copper and gold was lowered onto Gar's bowed, waiting head. Booming from the square outside, the city's great Baal's clock tolled the stroke of midnight, signalling the end of night. The start of day.
It was all very symbolic. A great sigh went up from the gathered witnesses, city guildmeisters and mistresses, Captain Auric, the general council's Doran and lords and ladies, mayors and mayoresses from the kingdom's larger towns, select royal staff. Daphne saw in their faces the raw relief bubbling like stew in a lidded pot. Praise Baal, praise Baal. Now life can get back to normal. She felt profoundly sorry. Baalsman Hulls began reciting the traditional weatherworker's blessing above the head of still kneeling Gar. Glancing sideways, she saw Darren wipe away a surreptitious tear, dear old fusspot that he was, a stickler for protocol, inevitably irritated by someone like Asher, but a good man. Not like Willa. Further along the pew in which they sat, Willa hunched in his finery like a dyspeptic peacock, still sulking, the repellent little tick. Everything Asher had ever said about the slug was true. That he could actually think he'd be named Ulcan administrator or even the assistant. Was he mad as well as horrible? And the way he'd acted ever since the announcement of her appointment. Snide, sneering, uncooperative. He'd better get over his snit soon, or Asher would dismiss him, no matter how many more excuses Darren found for him. Sick of the sight of him, she let her gaze wander elsewhere. Darren wasn't the only one moved to tears. Royal staff who'd known their new king as a babe in his cradle, as a toddler tumbling about the corridors of the palace and getting into mischief like any normal small child. Guild officials who'd come to know him so closely this past year, and maybe mourned his loss to magic. Noble Doranan, perhaps regretting that late-blossoming power and the madcap dreams it killed. Or dreaming instead of a nubile daughter's chances of being crowned queen. They all had tears on their cheeks. So many faces, so many hidden thoughts, so many lives that would wildly unravel once prophecy was fulfilled. Her grim musings were interrupted as Hulls reached down and drew Gar to his feet, turned the new king to face his silent subjects, raised his arms and cried,
"Behold a miracle! Behold our virtuous king by Baal's great grace, Gar the First, Weather Worker of Lur!"
Now the assembled witnesses were getting to their feet, cheering. Well, mostly cheering. Daphne scrambled to copy them. Beside her, clapping along with everybody else, Asher leaned close. "Baal bloody save me," he said, as, moved almost to tears, King Gar stood before them and accepted the rapturous acclaim. "Now life's going to get interesting." The unkempt, ill-favoured denizens of the Green Goose were in diabolical form, rollicking and carousing and tipping their mugs of beer over their shrieking neighbours' heads, then laughing as though they'd just done something terribly clever and hysterically funny. "Funny?" Willa sank further into his obscure corner seat, hugged his fourth tankard of ale closer to his chest, and sneered. It wasn't in the least bit funny. It was puerile. Juvenile. No, that was far too old for this unruly mob. It was infantile. Yes, infantile and mortifying. These rowdy sots were royal servants. His colleagues, loosely speaking. Very loosely. Supposedly they were the cream of Lur's Ulcan population. Yet here they were carrying on like ignorant farmhands at a barn dance, getting drunk and singing bawdy songs out of tune and generally making fools of themselves. Morg smite them all. Was this any way to celebrate the crowning of a king? And what was there to celebrate anyway? The Dagar's family had carelessly fallen off the side of a mountain. More than just a carriage had been wrecked. More than people had died.
He hadn't realized it at the time, but he knew it now. His future had been wrecked too. His dreams had died, as bloodily as any king. Quivering with overwhelming indignation, Willa swallowed another mouthful of his admittedly excellent ale. He couldn't understand it. How could Baal have done this to him? Another inebriated toast to the new king rattled the inn's smoke-soaked rafters. He winced. What in Baal's name had brought him into this den of iniquity? He didn't belong in here. He belonged in the Golden Cockerel, where the only interruption one ever experienced was the gentle throat-clearing of the waiter, asking if Sir required more wine. There was violin music in the Cockerel. There was an exquisite silk-swathed soprano in the Cockerel. There was cut glass and polished silverware and fine dining in the Cockerel. What had he been thinking coming here? A sly little voice inside his head answered, "You were thinking that in here you'd be safe. In here you wouldn't have to laugh and smile and wear a brave face. In here you could be invisible." Which wasn't the case at the Cockerel. He was well known there, lauded and fawned on and minced after, importuned and flattered and visible. Anonymity there was impossible. Worse, waiting for him in the refined atmosphere of the Cockerel were his genteel royal colleagues, the other secretaries and assistant secretaries and undersecretaries and junior royal apothecaries, who also frequented Dorina's most fashionable establishment. The ones who even now were saying, "Poor Willa, passed over twice, first in favour of the fisherman, and then for that odd woman, you know the one, all skin and bone, hangs on the stableman's sleeve, the bookseller, yes, her, without even his own precious superior to argue his case." "No! You mean to say that Darren supports the appointments? Gracious! Ah, well, they do say every man finds his level, and it seems poor Willa has found his. But who'd have thought it would be so low?" Moaning, he took another deep swallow of ale. Of course, it was foolish to feel hurt by Gar's decision. He should have expected the slight. Everyone knew that where Asher was concerned, the king had all the perspicacity of a newborn babe. What he hadn't bargained for was Darren's betrayal. After 3 years of faithful service, of uncomplaining drudge work and utterly reliable discretion, of foregone private pleasures and curtailed private plans, to be publicly humiliated like that, to be ranked as just another dispensable pen pusher, to see Darren standing shoulder to shoulder with that unspeakable Asher, their mutual implacable foe, and hear him praise the lout without stint or sarcasm. "Our good friend Asher, who'll serve His Majesty and the kingdom superbly as Olkin administrator." Trembling with rewoken outrage, Willa tried to drown tormenting memory with more ale, but instead spilled the tankard's remaining mouthfuls down his shirt front.
"Damn!"
He tried in vain to catch the eye of one of the Goose's 3 slatternly barmaids, but the useless wenches were too busy inviting Matt's stable lads to ogle their dupes.